Well, good morning. Welcome to the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station. We're the one, 95.1 FM, and of course for over 50 years, K. Wyman Radio, 1080 AM. Guess what I saw this morning on the way to work? I'm looking at it and I go, my gosh, we have a rainbow up in the sky. And then I said, wait a minute, it's not a rainbow. I think it's called a sundog. And it had a white and a bluish and a purple and an orange on both sides of the suns. It was pretty interesting. You know it's cold when you get one of those going. Fred Rogers, my guest this morning. Have you ever seen a sundog like that?
I have seen sundogs. I've taken a picture of them. They're glorious.
Yeah. Did you see the one this morning?
I did not see the one this morning. No, yeah. I missed it.
Each side of the sun.
Yeah.
And cloudy enough where the sun wasn't bright in your eyes. It's just a ball of light.
Yeah.
It's real pretty.
Yeah, the ice crystals do the same thing that rain does.
Yeah. Okay. 4 degrees when I got out of the car. And we're tough. It's January. It's Minnesota. And so far, so good, as a matter of fact. I feel bad for the snowmobilers and for the shovel and tractor dealers and snowblowers because it's a pretty bad winter. Were you here? You must have been here in 1991 on Halloween. We had 31 inches of snow on October 31st.
I was not here that year.
1991.
Yep, not in Northfield then.
Okay. Well, good morning, everybody. I have a gentleman by the name of Fred Rogers in studio, an interesting man, of course, and so they know whom I'm speaking to. Mm-hmm. Fred Rogers, what is your position in life here in Northfield, Minnesota?
Well, at Carleton College, I serve as the vice president and treasurer. So I'm in charge of business and financial operations at the college.
That must mean you're very busy.
I am pretty busy. I have a great team, though, so it makes it good.
Are some of the people that are on your team, do they work in this building?
I don't think I have anybody working in this building. This is mostly development and external relations down here.
Yeah, I know it's a lot to do with alma mater.
Mm-hmm,
and looking for donations, etc.
Working with our alumni and the thousands of people who support the college.
And it's fun to get that education and be successful because the recipients of that degree from Carleton, some going on for doctoral degrees, they remember the great times and the great education, and they get that little envelope and write a check and mail it out to you.
Our alumni are extremely generous.
Now, I know that you have a situation where you can't tell people about the business in regards to that. So when I ask you, what's the biggest donation you ever had? Can you tell me the number but not the or even the benevolent individual?
Well, I think the White's family is probably the biggest source of donations for us. Their support has just been exceptional. So supporting the White's Center that everybody in town knows, both phases of that, very generously, and then a large donation for scholarships that's enabling us with matching funds to build a big endowment to support our students better.
Were they in oil or were they in...
No. Actually, Wally White's was a contemporary of mine. He graduated 2 years before me.
Okay.
And did much better than I did financially. He is runs a group of mutual funds in Omaha called the White's Family of Funds.
Oh.
And so he's an investor.
Well, and obviously a good one.
He's very good and very successful.
Do you use him?
I do. I have some money in one of his funds.
Yeah. If I had some money, I'd ask you to introduce me. That sounds like he does a heck of a job.
They're public funds. You can actually buy them. Anyone can buy them. Yeah.
So what's a typical day of a guy that's the VP of the dollars coming into a private college? You wake up in the morning and you go to work and you sit down and then you're not punching little buttons all day?
No, I don't do that. Mostly I spend my time with my team and my team leaders. So we have people who are in charge of facilities and finance and human resources and the campus auxiliaries, which is dining and other things like that, the budget, security. And I spend time with them, and I spend time on particular problems or issues. I spend a fair amount of time right now getting ready for the board meeting. So we're having a Board of Trustees meeting. We do that 3 times a year, and that involves a lot of work for everybody to get ready for those discussions.
How many are on the board?
The board right now is just around 30, I think, maybe 31 people.
Yeah. Okay. So you have people coming in from all over the world,
yes.
Probably.
Yep, yep. The trustees come from all over the world, and we have a great meeting. They're here for 2 days, a little more than that sometimes, and it's a very good conversation. They're very interested. They're basically all alums. And so I think not quite all, but almost all of them are alumni. So they know the college well, known it for a long time, and they care deeply about it, and they're also generous.
And, of course, it jogs their memory of when they were students,
right.
Which, of course, is always a pleasurable thing to do, particularly if you have some classmates with you at that board meeting.
Yep.
Do you break it down into subcommittees?
Yep, there's committees. There are committees on the various functions like buildings and finance and students and alumni and things like that.
Do you also handle financial assistance through the board?
The financial aid for students?
Yes.
Well, there's a committee on enrollment and student financial services, but the board doesn't make those kinds of decisions. The staff would make those, but they advise us and they look at overall our policy and our practice.
Now, where do you meet 30 people? That's a lot of people.
Yeah, they typically meet at the White Center.
Okay.
But they meet also in other rooms on campus.
And then do you have to use a microphone because of the size of the board?
Yeah. Well, we have the trustees and then we have probably almost as many staff and other people who attend the meeting. So.
Does the president stop in every once in a while and say, hi, how are you? Thanks for coming.
Oh, I think the president and the chair of the board are running the meeting.
Oh.
Yeah, so the two of them will run the meeting. Yeah.
All right. And you came to Northfield in 1968.
I did.
Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. I have to ask you this. See who's been around longer, okay? I'm much older than you.
Okay.
You were a freshman at Carleton College
yep.
in 1968, and I came here in August. I remember it was August 17th, and I moved into an apartment. It's an eightplex, and it's that blonde building that's down in the River Park Mall, north of the Wells Fargo Bank and the Millstream Commons.
Okay.
And there's 8 apartments there. $135 a month was my cost. You walked in the door, and there was a little space in the living room, and then there was a, you call it an island almost, and that was the... Well, that's where you ate. There was no place for a dining table.
Right.
And then a kitchen and a sink, and then you walk right into the bedroom.
Yeah.
And then the bathroom's in the corner there. Really small, but it was very comfortable, and I enjoyed that. And I was mentioning to you I had a chance to buy that for $60,000.
Wow.
In 1968.
That would have been a lot of money in 1968.
Yeah, I was going to say, holy cow, that's a lot of money. So where did you come from to come to Carleton?
Well, when I came, and I moved in about, I don't know, maybe 4 weeks after you got here.
Okay.
So we were pretty close.
Yeah.
And I moved into Goodhue over at Goodhue Dormitory. That's where I lived. But I came here from basically from just outside of Philadelphia where I'd been staying with my relatives. Because my parents were living overseas, and so they had gone back, and I was here by myself. And so I came out after, I remember watching the Miss America pageant over Labor Day weekend, I think it
Isn't
was,
it something? Yeah.
With my relatives there in New Jersey and Philadelphia.
And the Jerry Lee Lewis Marathon, or not Jerry Lee Lewis, Jerry Lewis.
The Jerry Lewis, it might have been on then, I can't remember, was it on in 1968?
Right about that time,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, I remember that.
And now were your folks in education?
Yep, my dad was a college teacher, my mom taught elementary school.
Do you have siblings?
I do, I have 3 younger brothers.
Okay, so you're the oldest.
I am.
Okay, so there's Roger. Then after Roger, we have...
My name's Fred.
How many... My last name is Eddie. And people call me Eddie.
I would say about 30% of the people I meet call me by my last name. Must be like that.
I'm sorry, Fred.
No problem.
Okay, your brother right after you?
Yeah, his name is Andy.
Andy, okay.
Yeah.
How much younger is he?
He's 2 years younger.
Okay, and then after Andy?
Then I have one called Glenn.
Okay.
And he is 6 years younger.
Okay.
And then I have one called Eddie, and he's 8 years younger.
Okay.
Yeah. And we have a lot of famous namesakes in our family. Well, so, you know, people give me sometimes humor about my name being Mr. Rogers' name, Fred Rogers. But my dad's name is Will Rogers. And my brother's Glenn, has his middle name is Roy Rogers.
Oh, my gosh. I remember all of them.
Yeah.
How much younger is Eddie than you?
He's eight.
Eight years younger. Yeah. So took a little break in between Andy and Glenn.
Yeah.
And what was your hometown?
Well, we live in Pittsburgh. I'm a Pittsburgh. I call Pittsburgh my hometown, and I'm still a Steelers and Pirate and Penguins fan.
Okay.
Sorry about that for all the Minnesota fans. But
well, I remember when Pittsburgh got to the finals in the Cup for professional hockey.
Yep. Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I drove down to Indianapolis to the Indy 500.
Okay.
And, of course, I had Minnesota license plates, and the North Stars at that time had done well, but they got knocked out by Pittsburgh.
Yep.
And, boy, were they rowdy.
The Penguins were.
The fans that were at the race.
You
go about a mile an hour to get into a parking area, and people are on every corner outside of the track waiting to go in.
Oh.
And boy, those Penguin fans, they just, Minnesota, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, okay. So,
well, it's interesting. One of the fun things about the Penguins is people ask, why would the Pittsburgh hockey team be called Penguins?
Yeah, why?
It's a very interesting story, actually.
Okay.
Because as Penguins don't have anything to do with Pittsburgh, you don't think about them as being in Antarctica. But the Civic Development Authority in Pittsburgh in the 50s built a brand new sort of what they called the Civic Arena to hold the symphony and sporting events, and it was covered, but it had a dome that could open. So the dome could sort of like an eggshell slide around and open up, and they would have open-air symphony concerts and open-air events there. Well, when it was closed, it looked like an igloo, and so it was called in Pittsburgh the igloo. And so when the hockey team made it their home, then they said, well, the hockey team's home is the igloo, so we're going to call them the Penguins. So that's how they got to be called the Penguins. And the igloo's torn down now. They don't have that building anymore, but they're still the Penguins.
And did the people, what are you called? Are you called Pittsburghians or?
Pittsburghers.
Pittsburghers.
Yeah.
I got my Pittsburgher from Will Rogers. 9:15 on the Wayne Eddy Affair. Fred Rogers is my guest this morning. He is the CEO in the financial department of Carleton College.
Would that be CFO.
CFO.
Yeah, the president's the CFO. I don't want any confusion about that.
Okay, there we go. CFO. Okay, so when you think of Pittsburgh, I think they have a image of being a tough steel town and a lot of blue-collar workers.
Mm-hmm.
And I have not been to Pittsburgh, but what is the community like?
You would be surprised, actually, because Pittsburgh, the steel mill in Homewood, which built a lot of the plate armor for the Second World War, was at one time, I think, one of the largest rolling mills in the world. It's closed, gone. There's a Costco and a water theme park on the site. And a lot of the industry like that from the era of the 30s and 40s is gone. And what's happened is it's become a major medical center with the University of Pittsburgh research and hospital system. So there's a huge network of hospitals, research hospitals. You remember some of the first heart transplants were done in Pittsburgh in the United States. And then because of, I'm going to claim this because it's my other alma mater. After I left Carleton, I went to Carnegie Mellon for graduate work. And Carnegie Mellon has really fired the technology development in Pittsburgh. So there's a big Google office there now. There's the National Software Engineering Institute there, which does encryption and work with the software encryption issues all over the world. And Carnegie Mellon founded this Robotics Institute, which has produced a huge robotics program. So there's a very robust technology sector. So I'd say it's healthcare and technology much more now, whereas, let's say, 100 years ago, it was basic industry and steel, as you said.
Kind of like The Twin Cities.
It is a lot like that in a way. Yeah, the Twin Cities had an older industry of milling, and that's still there, but it's gone on to all these other things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, what about rivers in Pittsburgh?
Well, they have three, and they're very proud of that. And
Three River Stadium.
Yeah, Three River Stadium. And I was thinking actually this with somebody else the other day about, you know, Minnesota could have had the same thing because it's essentially the same circumstance. But in the Minnesota case, they chose to name one of those rivers with the same name and keep going. So the Ohio River comes from St. Louis or just above there, Cairo, Illinois, up to Pittsburgh as a major tributary to the Mississippi. And then there are two rivers there, the Allegheny, which goes all the way up into New York, and the Monongahela, which I think is the largest north-flowing river in the United States that flows down into West, comes out of West Virginia. But I was thinking to myself, well, who decided that those are three rivers? It could have been the Ohio could have gone all the way to one of those places, and the other one would have been, you know, something else. Like our case here, we have the Minnesota River and the Mississippi River, but who's to say which was which when they got to Minneapolis? I don't know how that decision gets made.
In the St. Croix.
Yeah, yeah. I think what I've decided is maybe it's this way. In Pennsylvania, the European settlement came from east to west, and so they first encountered those other rivers, and they didn't really know what. So those got named early because people found them earlier. Whereas here, the settlement came more up from the east and up the Mississippi, although there were some French who came down from the north. And people didn't really know where the Mississippi went, so maybe, I don't know. If they had found the Minnesota and the upper Mississippi first, they might be two different rivers. And the Mississippi would be the third. But anyway, that's what happened in Pittsburgh. That's why they have three rivers.
And what about paint?
Pittsburgh paint, yep. Pittsburgh Paint and Plate Glass, PPG, is a large company there. They have a huge building downtown, a big glass skyscraper that's quite the monument to downtown Northfield.
Pittsburgh.
Yep,
you said Pittsburgh. Downtown Northfield.
Downtown Pittsburgh, sorry.
Yeah, there's no place in downtown Northfield to build something.
Yeah, I don't think they got a 50-story building here, but anyway.
No. Well, a former friend of mine, because he has passed away, the first man that ran the Minnesota State Lottery, George Anderson, knew that my wife and I were going to take a trip out east, and we were going to go up to Trump Tower.
Mm.
And he said, take some by roads when you're in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
We did. Absolutely beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
I'm thinking coal mines, rusty buildings with, you know, iron, blah, blah, blah. And it's just gorgeous. It has so many forests.
Yeah, the north central part of the state is spectacular that way. But it also has what you were fearing. It also has coal mines, strip mine tailings, rivers that still run red today.
Yeah.
So the environmental stewardship 100 years ago wasn't what it should have been.
And, of course, they have Pennsylvania has Joe Namath.
Is that right?
Isn't he from, like, Beaver Falls?
Oh, I think that might be right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a suburb of Pittsburgh, I think.
He's about your age, between you and me.
He's older than
age,
I
am. Yeah. Yep. Interesting man, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So what about you as a kid growing up with your brothers Fred, Andy, Glenn, and Eddie?
Mm-hmm.
Did you end up being a babysitter at times?
That's an interesting question. I don't really remember that a lot. I think not. My mother wasn't working full-time a lot of the time I was really young. And so I don't think I did that much.
Where did your folks teach, your dad teach?
So he worked in Pittsburgh. He worked at Westinghouse Research. And then he taught at a little college called Teal College, which is up in the northern part of Pennsylvania, northwest Pennsylvania. And at that time, my mother, she taught elementary school early on, right after they were married. And then she did library work for a while. And then she went back to teaching.
I think Westinghouse had a plant here, and maybe it was Whirlpool in St. Paul.
I don't know. Yeah.
That's gone also.
Yep. Yeah, Westinghouse as a whole company is essentially gone.
And I believe that was they made television sets too.
Oh, it could be.
Yeah.
Yep.
Westinghouse and refrigerators.
They made refrigerators. They made a lot of big equipment. They had a big Westinghouse nuclear facility in Pittsburgh where they built nuclear power plants for a long time until that all stopped.
There were three of them, right? And they had a burnout?
Oh, there was one in Harrisburg, but in Pittsburgh was the facility where they sold that technology. Westinghouse sold and built those plants all over the world, actually.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
And your dad worked for them?
He wasn't in that division. He worked in their general research division.
Okay. And then he went on to profess.
Then he went on to teach. Yeah, exactly.
What was his subject?
Physics.
Physics?
Yeah, he taught physics.
When you were a kid, did he show you little tricks about nature?
He did. We would do stargazing. And he was, I would say, always interested in how things in the world worked. And so we were always puzzling over how things worked and why they worked the way they worked. And
what type of area of Pittsburgh did you live?
We lived in what Pittsburgh called the East End. So Pittsburgh, with these three rivers, has a lot of hills because there's also a lot of creeks and tributaries. And going east of downtown, there's this sort of central, I would call it, in Minnesota, you would call it like a plain or a bluff, but it's not really looks like that in Pittsburgh. But there's this big flat area out to the east. It's where the suburbs of parts of the city, actually not suburbs, but Oakland and Shadyside and Squirrel Hill are. And that's where the University of Pittsburgh is. That's where Carnegie Mellon is. That's where a lot of the educational establishment is. The hospitals, a lot of them are there.
Now, how far were you from Philadelphia?
Oh, about as far as you can get in Pennsylvania. So Philadelphia is all the way at the other end of the state by New Jersey. It's about 300 miles.
So were there was there any a competition between Pittsburgh and Philadelphia and Beaver Falls and all that? I mean, was there a pride being from Pittsburgh and you're from Philadelphia?
Pittsburgh and Philadelphia are like, I don't know, we don't have a good example in Minnesota, but other states where you have two sort of competing cities like that, yeah.
So when it came to professional sports,
yeah,
what did you have? You had the Pittsburgh Steelers,
yep,
who I hated.
Ooh.
Well,
Pittsburgh Pirates.
Baseball
team who are named the Pirates because early on in their history, they're one of the original baseball teams, so like the Cubs and some others. And they would go out and recruit players from other teams, and so people accused them of stealing players. Hence, they were called the Pirates.
The Pittsburgh Pirates.
Yeah, and I think one of the teams they stole players from was Philadelphia. And then the Penguins are the other big team. They don't have a basketball team.
When Pittsburgh Steelers, I used to cover the Vikings for over 25 years,
oh, wow,
and I was really into it.
Yeah.
Went to all of their Super Bowls,
okay,
unfortunately, and the Steelers knocked the Vikings out mm-hmm, on occasion.
Yeah.
And when Philadelphia, the Eagles,
mm-hmm,
play the Steelers,
mm-hmm,
that's got to be
that's a big game, yeah.
A big game.
Yeah. Pittsburgh has several. Oakland is a big rival, and New England. Well, we had a sad experience with Oakland back early on in the 70s and 80s where Oakland was strong. They beat Pittsburgh in some very close games, and they came to be, for a variety of reasons, viewed as the nemesis in Pittsburgh. But
okay. Yep. Did you ever go to Eagle-Steeler game?
I don't think I went to an Eagle. I don't remember going to an Eagle-Steeler game. I've been to a number of Steeler games, but I don't remember that.
Did you take pride in the fact that your home state has Philadelphia, which is just steeped in American history?
You know, it's funny. When I was a kid, I don't think I really got that very well, and so I was more just about my town,
yeah,
Pittsburgh.
But did you take class trips there?
Yeah. Oh, we went to Philadelphia. We went to Washington, D.C. We did all that stuff from Pittsburgh. The high school trip to Washington is an overnight, you know, drive down there, spend the whole day, get on the bus and drive back. You don't rent a hotel room. So it's kind of an exhausting experience.
Yeah. Well, you know, in Minnesota, I think if you go to third biggest city would be Duluth.
Yep.
And it takes a while to get there.
Yep.
And my trip out east, what really fascinated me was all of the states. I mean, it's not far to go to 10 states.
Yeah, if you get to New England especially, it's
yeah,
fair. Yeah.
So when you go to New York City,
mm-hmm,
how much time do you devote to getting there?
From Pittsburgh?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a long drive. That'd be... New York City would probably be a 10 or 11-hour drive. It's
okay.
A very long drive.
All right. Well, what about the winters in mm-hmm, Pittsburgh on the East End?
Yeah, well, the winter in Pittsburgh, like every... I've lived in other places in the East, and one of the phenomenons of North America is all of the parts of the country that are effectively downwind of the Great Lakes. So if you're southeast of the Great Lakes, you get this winter that is a little bit warmer because the air comes across the lakes and warms up, and gray because you get all this cloud. So there's just it's a much grayer, wet. Pittsburgh, typical winter I remember is 35 degrees and raining in January, which I hate. I much prefer winter in Minnesota, actually,
yeah,
where it's cold and white.
But you did get snow.
Oh, yeah, we did get snow. But then it would turn gray, you know, because it'd get dirty after a while because it didn't really stay cold. And
that's kind of funny because my next question was going to be, you are old enough to have remembered the efforts by people not even from Pittsburgh to clean it up, up the air. How bad was the air that you can remember? Were the mills and mines running when you were a kid?
Well, when my parents moved there, they had an apartment on the hill overlooking that mill I was talking about. And she told me that there were a number of days when she would hang out laundry, and if the wind was blowing the wrong direction, she had to take it in and wash it again.
You know, that brings back memories. There's so many children, kids, millennials or whatever, hanging out clothes.
I know.
You know.
Of course. We didn't have a dryer.
No, it was fun to run through the laundry, you know. Yeah. Of course, Mom would yell at you, but, you know, you run through the sheets.
Exactly.
But hang them out to dry, you know. Use the solar system.
Yeah, and they had a different smell. They were crisp and sort of crunchy.
Yeah, and even sometimes they froze.
Yeah.
And you try to carry it in like
that might be a more Minnesota thing than a Pennsylvania thing.
We are talking to a gentleman by the name of Fred Rogers. He is the CFO for Carleton College, and we're going to take a little break and come back and learn more about life as a young man in Pennsylvania, not Philadelphia, but Pittsburgh.
The Northfield Area Chamber of Commerce would like to congratulate Aurora Pharmaceutical, this year's Business of the Year, Chris Canelli, winner of Business Person of the Year, and Lynn Ziegler, the Chamber Ambassador of the Year. All three awards are very well deserved, and we thank you for all you do for the Northfield community. If you would like to offer your congratulations in person, tickets are still available for the Business Recognition Banquet on Thursday, January 31st from 5 to 9 at the Grand Event Center. Go to northfieldchamber.com for more information and to reserve your seats today.
Hi, welcome to this Subway ad for 5 foot long starting at $4.99 each. How do you want it?
Secret DJ set.
At a retirement home?
Weird, I like it.
DJ sandwich in the house.
What'd he say?
Cold cut combo $4.99.
Gold butt mopo.
Meeple marinara $4.99.
How much?
$4.99. Subway, make it what you want.
Limited time only at participating restaurants. Prices and subs included may vary. Additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied.
Did you get that? Fred Rogers is my guest this morning on KYMN Radio. He graduated from high school in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And I'm going to play the number 8 song in all of 1968. Are you ready?
All right. This is a good test.
Let's see how quickly you can name that tune and the performer or performers. 1, 2, 3.
Oh.
Yes.
I think it's Simon and Garfunkel.
That's true.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, I know this song. I can't name it. I do know it.
Yeah.
Mrs. Robinson's Affair. There we go.
Mrs. Robinson.
Mrs. Robinson, yeah.
You saw that movie?
I did see that movie, Dustin Hoffman.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. There we go. Yeah.
1968, the number 8 song in all that year, and of course, Plastics, my friend.
Yes, that was his tip, right? Go into Plastics.
Isn't it terrible that I watched reports on plastic and gathering in the ocean and the straws and all that, and I was thinking, why don't they just collect all that, melt it, and make more things? To me, that's how simple it seems, but evidently it isn't that simple. Well, Mr. Rogers, whose father's name is Will Rogers, and somebody you said is named Roy Rogers.
My brother's middle name was Roy.
Okay, yeah. Which brother?
Glenn.
Glenn, okay. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
All right.
And I think my brother Randy was named for Andrew Carnegie, but...
Yeah, we have the library right across the street.
Another famous Pittsburgher.
I want to stick around in Pittsburgh. Were you born there and until you came to Carleton College, lived there?
Actually, I was not born there, and I didn't actually graduate from high school there, but I lived there for this long period in between.
Okay.
So I said my dad was a physicist, and he was working at the University of New Mexico, where a lot of the physicists in the country were working in the late 40s on a project.
Manhattan.
Yeah. And so he was out there with his research. And I think the story was that one of his professors left and went to Pittsburgh. And my father and I think two or three other graduate students all left and went with him. So they moved to Pittsburgh. I was just a baby. I had just been born. But I was actually born in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Oh, that's a beautiful place, too.
Oh, I love New Mexico. Yeah. The colors there are so spectacular.
My wife and I take the motorcycle.
Oh, nice.
And toured out there.
Nice.
And beautiful.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was thinking when you ride a motorcycle and a thunderstorm or tornadoes come about, it seems like the weather in New Mexico was sunny, and if it rained, you could see it 10 miles away,
right?
And you'd drive right through it.
Or you could drive around it, because you could see the rainstorm.
Yeah. So, and I love the way they do their freeways.
Yeah.
You know, with the colorful bridges.
Yep.
And all that.
Yep.
Really
the colors of the landscape are spectacular.
Do you ever go out there?
I have been out there.
Obviously, you do. But
I've been out there a number of times, and I love it there. Yeah.
Okay.
It's very nice.
What is a physicist do? I mean, are they involved in math, or are they involved in chemistry?
He was involved. I think his area of research was gaseous diffusion, so gases diffusing in a space and various charged ways in which that happens. I'm not sure. I wasn't ever really that involved in his own research, but I think that's what he was doing.
Something way over my head, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, it's I didn't do a lot. I started to be a physicist, but ended up doing other things. So,
where did you start to be a physicist?
At Carleton. When I came to Carleton, I was going to be a physics major early on, and then that didn't work out so well. So I ended up as a math major.
Okay, so you wanted to follow in your dad's footsteps
first? I enjoyed physics in high school, but turns out it's a lot harder in college.
Yeah,
it's really hard.
So Fred Rogers is my guest this morning. He is the CFO for Carleton College and out of East End, Pittsburgh. And that was a nice neighborhood, I assume.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And what was your – how did it work? Did it go K through 6 or 7, 8, 9, and then 10, 11, 12? How did that work?
So I'm what people would call a baby boomer. So when I went to elementary school – the school systems were all just exploding with kids. So my experience was I went to a first grade that was in an elementary school, just K through 6. I'm not even sure it had kindergarten, actually. We had a kindergarten separately, I think, in a separate place.
So you were born in 1950?
50, yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And that baby boomer for sure.
Yeah. And then my second grade year was a year they were building schools. And so we had to actually share desks. I sat at a little desk with somebody else sharing the seat, and we had like 55 kids in the classroom. It was just chaos.
Yeah.
And so they had two students to every desk. And then that was in September, and then somewhere in late October, the other school got opened because I think it had been under construction and was late. And then half the class left. And so then we're back to at my own desk for the rest of the year.
I'm going to ask you a question. I think I know the answer, but did you have inkwells?
I think we did. Yeah, I don't think we used them, but I think there were inkwells in the desks. Yeah.
Okay, because I actually used them.
Yeah, probably.
And some listeners are wondering, what do you mean, inkwell? So did you have the junior high and the high school?
Yeah, and then when he began teaching in college, we moved up to Greenville, which was north of Pittsburgh, and I went to junior high school there, and I started high school there, and that was... Again, it was all in this transition. So let's think. I was in fifth grade, and the schools, again, were overcrowded. They were still overcrowded. And so they combined the fifth and sixth grade in with the junior high school.
All right.
So I went to this junior high school for fifth through ninth grade.
Okay.
It's kind of odd. They don't do that in middle school anymore. But, and it was called the junior high school, but it was in transition. Yeah. And then the high school at that point was 10th through 12th grade.
Okay.
And so, but all that's gotten reorganized now.
So when you were in the ninth grade,
yeah,
you were BMO. Is that big man?
Yeah, like BMO in the junior high school, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And what did you get involved in? Now, we're going to talk about high school independently, but back there.
In junior high school?
Yeah. What did you get involved in? Did they have some great programs for art or sports? Or?
They did. They had, I remember shop class. We had shop class. And
really?
I think I still have the cutting board I made for my mother.
Okay.
And something like that. We had sports. I did wrestling. We had the biggest thing I did was there was this thing called the Audio Visual Club.
Okay.
It was a great scam, actually.
Yeah, to get out of class.
Oh, my gosh. So there were just four of us, and it was three of my best friends and I, and we had the guy who was our science teacher who got to be the advisor for the Audio Visual Club. So for homeroom, we just had the four of us and him. We could do whatever we wanted, and we were to go around the school and set up projectors and take them down and do that for stuff. So basically, anytime you were in the hallway and somebody would stop you, you would just say, well, I'm going to so-and-so's room to deal with a projector. You had a free pass. It was a wonderful thing.
Yeah. Did you establish yourself in middle school as a leader, with the report card? And
I wouldn't say I was a good student. But I always thought there were all these other people who were, you know, big athletes and looking good and attracting all kinds of attention to the leader types.
So now let's go to high school. And did you have the heebie-jeebies when you became a 10th grader and no longer the BMOC?
Yeah, I remember thinking, boy, the seniors are so old and so big. And, you know, we were just little sophomores in high school. And it was a relatively new high school. I can't remember when it was built, but it was probably within 5 years of when I went there. Mm-hmm. That high school had been built. And so it was nice and, you know, it was spacious. Now it wasn't crowded anymore, so that was good.
So when you made that transition, did you take along your AB pass?
No, I lost that status. That went away in junior high school, so now it's just back to the regular crowd.
Okay, so now, did you wrestle in high school?
I did.
Okay, what weight?
So I started out at 112, and I ended up, by the time I was a senior, I was at 135.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was 145 at the most when I was a senior.
Oh, wow.
So were you a pretty good wrestler?
I would say I was okay. Pennsylvania is a pretty strong house for wrestling, so I was on the varsity team, but I would, you know, we had this thing where on the varsity, you had to win your right to wrestle in the varsity match. And so whoever was wrestling varsity, you could challenge them. And it was literally that. And you'd have a challenge match, and whoever won got to wrestle in the next varsity match. And so if you could beat the guy who was wrestling varsity, you could wrestle. And if you couldn't, you couldn't. So sometimes somebody would move up in a weight class or something. And so then somebody else would be there and I could beat them. But I didn't wrestle regularly, but I wrestled often in varsity.
Do you remember your coach?
I can see him. I don't know if I can remember his name.
Well, a lot of time, athletes really admire their coaches, have a big impact on them.
Yeah, he pushed us really hard. I was one of those things where I learned that you can really push yourself way past where it feels like it's possible.
Did you ever have to trim weight? What's that like?
Oh, I remember so many Christmases of me being the one that couldn't eat a thing, you know, because I had to stay down at weight class, and because over Christmas holiday, we'd have tournaments and things. And so you had to make weight all through vacation.
Did you ever go into a sweat box?
I didn't go into a sweat box. I wore sweatsuits. So you'd wear sweatsuits to work out.
Okay. Rubber?
Yeah, rubber suits to work out. Yep.
Did you lift weights?
I lifted some weights, yep.
Okay.
Yeah, ran a lot.
Did you do cross country?
I did track
okay.
in the spring. I wasn't great at that, but I did track. But no, just we would run a lot for wrestling.
And I'm anticipating you were an excellent student in regards to studies.
Yeah, I was a good student. I wouldn't say the very best, but I was a good student.
So other people would look at you and say, that Fred Rogers, you know, he's kind of a geek. But don't mess with him because he can throw you, you know, put you down.
I don't think people were saying that. I don't think so.
Okay. Well, they were. I talked to some people.
No. Oh, did you?
Fred, yeah. I always ask this question, and our regular listeners know what's coming up now.
Okay.
And that is, you're a wrestler.
Yeah.
What is that one moment that you'll never forget in competition, whether you won or whether you lost? Whether it was a location, whether a painful thing or a break, what's that one thing you'll never forget in your wrestling career?
You know, I think this is going to be, I don't want this to be sound wrong, but I would say I was a mediocre wrestler. I was not going to go to states, but I wrestled, as I said, varsity. But I worked at it really hard, and I cared a lot about it, and my friends were doing it as well, and so it was a thing I really wanted to do. And I remember one time we had a varsity match, and I had lost my match. And I remember my dad said to me, I don't know why you do that. You know, you're just not as good as the other guys. And that really hurt. That was like, wow. You know, I lost a match, but I'm still working. I was really working at it. And I was small. And so, you know, I wasn't the biggest guy. And
was he at the match?
Yeah, he watched. Yeah, he was there.
Okay.
Yeah. So I don't know. I just sort of put it off and, you know, kept going at it. But it made me feel like, yeah, if I can't win, I still want to go at it.
Yeah.
You know, and I did go at it. And then I went to a different high school for my junior and senior years.
Oh.
And that high school was not as competitive. And so I ended up as captain of that wrestling team and wrestled more there. You know, it was sort of like if you go to a different circumstance, you can be you can be relatively better. But it just was the competition was different.
So do you have a memory of that the different high school that you went to?
Yeah, that was one time they asked me as captain because they were short, would I be a referee? And so I was refereeing like the JV match or something before the varsity matches. And that was when I learned how hard it is to be a referee. It is really hard because, I mean, I knew all the things, but to watch it with that level of focus and to really, you know, see every nuance, it was hard. And so people got mad at me for being a referee because they didn't think I was, you know, calling it right or missed that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is too hard. Being a referee is really hard. So I have great respect for referees.
Did you ever go to any professional wrestling?
I did. With my son one time, we went to see Hulk Hogan in Syracuse.
Cool.
At a big match. And that was kind of fun. It doesn't have a lot to do with wrestling, but
no,
but
it was a show.
It was a lot of fun. But more interesting, I went to see the national championship when Dan Gable was actually wrestling. He eventually went to the Olympics and became a big coach. But when he was wrestling for Iowa, I think, we went to a group of my friends from Chicago. We drove and went to the national championship and watched some matches there. That's very exciting because you just see people doing things and you know how hard it is to be that quick and to be that strong and to do those things. And that was impressive.
And I never, we didn't have wrestling in the high school that I went to in St. Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Closest we came was getting on a mat and during gym class.
Mm.
And this great big guy was a coach, or actually not a coach. He was a basketball coach, but, you know, he had to run this part of the school day.
Yeah.
So there'd be 10 of us, 6 of us, whatever, on one side, 6 on the other side. He'd throw a shoe in the middle, and then we had to go after that shoe and bring it over to the other side.
Oh, my.
And it was quite a deal. But you know what? It was kind of fun to be kind of on the bottom and have that shoe and all these people trying to take it away.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I was a skinny little kid. But, but I can assume that you probably have fond memories of wrestling and doing some quick takedowns and things like that.
I enjoyed that, and I enjoyed the – when you – you know, your weight is down and you're in really good shape it sort of feels like you're a cat because you can be so quick on your feet and you can move around. And that's a fun feeling to be able to do that. Yeah.
You know, when I was about 145 pounds after high school, I had a roommate that was about 200 pounds.
Oh, my.
And a former football player, stronger than an ox.
Yeah.
And him and I would wrestle. And, it was a gimme that he's going to beat me.
But
the more we did it, the harder it was for him to beat me.
Yeah.
You helped me bring back some pleasant memories.
It's
12 minutes before 10 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair. My guest this morning is a gentleman by the name of Fred Rogers, and he graduated from high school in Pennsylvania in 1968, and he is a CFO for Carleton College, and we are going to take a break and come back and continue our conversation with Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers.
Hi, I'm Angie Taylor, Director of Life Enrichment at Three Links Care Center in Northfield. We offer daily activities at each of our facilities, including independent senior living, assisted living, care center, and memory care. The activities range from exercise classes to sing-alongs, games to gardening, from bus rides in the countryside to painting fine art. Activities are personalized for the individual. Please call Three Links at 664-8800 or find out more at threelinks.org.
Monster Energy AMA Supercross, an FIM World Championship. Witness an exhilarating sports story written in real time. A grueling battle of athleticism and determination that demands a lifetime of training to win, but only takes seconds to lose. Get your tickets today to see the world's best dirt bike riders race for the world's biggest title in your hometown. Tickets start at $15. Restrictions and additional charges may apply. Coming to U.S. Bank Stadium February 9th. Visit supercrosslive.com.
There's exciting news in Denison and coming to Northfield. Farmers State Bank is changing their name to Heritage Bank Minnesota effective October 1st. The name is changing, but the focus will remain the same. High-quality, service-oriented banking they've provided Southern Minnesota since 1930. Heritage Bank Minnesota is excited to announce they are coming to Northfield in the fall of 2019. Employees of Heritage Bank Minnesota already live in Northfield and are proud to sponsor Raider Athletics. Go Raiders! Heritage Bank Minnesota, member FDIC.
Sitting in the morning sun.
Zotus. I love this. Sitting on the dock of the bay.
Yeah. Remember who did it?
Watching. I thought Otis Redding sang it. Is that right?
100%.
There you go.
Away.
Yeah.
You're
that
doing
one I got
good.
Even faster than the other one. That's interesting.
Mr. Rogers, you're doing good. As a matter of fact, you won the opportunity to take off your sweater and hang it up. Fred Rogers is my guest on KYMN Radio, and we're talking about his high school years. He went to two different high schools, and which was the latter high school?
So in 1966, my father was teaching there, teaching physics in Pennsylvania, and he got this opportunity to go teach for what he thought would be 2 years at a brand new college that was opening up in Saudi Arabia, actually. So it was going to be teaching Saudis to become scientists and engineers because all the oil business was basically run by Americans and people who weren't nationals. And so the king at that time had this idea that if we had a college, we could get people, you know, people in our own country to understand and become professionals. So he went there to teach physics. And so we moved overseas, and I ended up at a boarding school because there weren't American schools there. So I ended up at a boarding school in Beirut.
Was it a military?
No, it was an American school. It was actually the school that was started for all the faculty children of the American University of Beirut. So they had a high school for all the children, basically, of the faculty. And then it expanded and took in other kids from the city. And the oil company convinced them to help have a boarding department so that kids from the oil company could come there.
So if you want to bring that mic closer, that's
cool. Sorry.
One of the things, a boarding school, but you also have Andy and Glenn and Eddie. And did they also go to the boarding school?
So Andy and I went to the boarding school because we were both of the age where we had to do that at the time. And the two younger ones stayed back there, and they went to elementary school there where my mother ended up as the headmistress. So they had the headmistress. She ran the school.
Your mother was a mistress?
She was the headmistress
okay.
of a school, but she taught in the school. So she taught fourth grade and fifth grade, I think. And so I think one of them, I'm not sure whether they had her for a teacher or not, but they went to school where she was teaching. And then eventually Glenn went to the same school for 1 year. And then a lot of the troubles in the Civil War in Lebanon started, and he didn't go there. So the two of them went to high school in India. Wow. So they went to a British school in South India and graduated from there.
Did you get homesick when you were a boarder?
I did sometimes. I would go home like for major vacations. So I'd go home at Thanksgiving and Christmas and maybe Easter. But, you know, like that, three times a year or so.
What about roommates?
Yeah, I had a great roommate. Another kid who I still see. We just had a reunion here last summer, and I went and saw him. So his dad worked for the Air Force, and they were advising on the operation of the airport there in Dahran. So he was there, stationed there to do that.
Were you ever in fear?
No, it was fine. Actually, it was very calm. It was, it was relatively undeveloped compared to what it is today. But we would go camping and hike around and have all kinds of good time.
What kind of topography and what kind of nature did it, you're talking about Saudi Arabia?
Yeah, Saudi Arabia is mostly desert.
Okay,
it's pretty much desert and some mountains, and then there's a lot of beach. So there's the beaches and the ocean.
No lakes.
Not really lakes. There are oases. So at an oasis where there'll be big wells and springs, there might be some what you would call ponds.
Fresh water?
Yeah, fresh water. But there wouldn't be lakes. It's not like Minnesota.
Did you do the beach thing?
We did.
Go surfing?
Oh, yeah. We'd go to the beach and hang out, and people had motorboats and ski boards and all that. And
so it was kind of fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Did you ever have to sneak into your barracks?
Well, we lived in a compound that the college had built for faculty. And no, I didn't sneak in and out of there much. No, not there. Maybe that might have happened in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Well, I went to a boarding school.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I had one roommate, and his name is Magnus Malarkey.
Uh-oh, that sounds like trouble right there.
And he was from Iceland.
Hmm.
And he was not trouble. He was an outstanding student.
Oh, wow.
And he tolerated me during study hours where he was hitting the books, and wow. I would hide the comic books behind the geography book. But I often wanted to look him up, Malarkey, and see how it ended up. Did you have bunk beds in your place?
No, we didn't. We had single cot beds, and my roommate Jim Richards and I, you know, got along for 2 years together.
Where did you eat?
We had a dining hall for the boarders. We had breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And I was a waiter. And that's when I learned what happens behind the doors of the kitchen. You don't really want to know when you're out on the other side eating it.
Somebody got mad at somebody.
Well, or stuff falls off the plate and gets put back on or whatever happens.
5 second rule.
Yeah, whatever.
So did you get tipped?
No.
No.
No, it was just like it would be like a school cafeteria.
Okay.
I was waiting.
Well, now, what kind of competition did they have there for young men? There weren't a whole lot of you, I would assume.
There were the school, I think in my class, there were 68 people in the class, something like that.
Pretty good.
So, not all boarders, but we had sports. I learned to play soccer. That's where I started playing soccer. And I was still wrestling and doing better at that. I think then I started more doing photography there. So I did a lot of photography. I was in the yearbook club and did photography for the student paper and things like that.
Well, now, is it true that the person that's a photographer for the yearbook can put themselves and their buddies in all the pictures?
Yeah, some could do that. I never did that.
Okay.
I also did the photography for my senior yearbook at Carleton. And, I was a Carletonian photographer for a few years, but no, I didn't put myself all in. In fact, my wife's still mad at me because we did a thing that we were doing together, and I was taking pictures, and she doesn't appear in very many of them or any of them. And she wants to know why that happened.
Yeah.
She wasn't my wife at the time, but we were still friends.
The Defeated Jesse James Day Committee has an annual get-together after in November.
Yeah.
And they present a slide show.
Mm-hmm.
And when certain people show up, there'll be a cheer in that area, and another one would be a cheer. And you know everybody in that room, including myself, maybe even more than anybody, are looking to see if you're going to be in the picture, you know.
Yeah.
And if you get in several times, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And so what about camels?
I've seen camels. In Saudi Arabia, there are camels. In Lebanon, there aren't camels, really. But, yeah, there's camels. We would go out in the desert. Most of the Bedouin at the time we were there had trucks. So they would have these very elaborately decorated trucks. I mean, I've always thought that would be the coolest thing to have a truck like that. I mean, it's got lights all over it and, you know, all kinds of iron filigree that's painted colors.
Yeah.
And just really cool trucks.
I had a friend who married a Saudi Arabian, and she lives there.
Uh-huh.
Do you think that's preferable over America?
Well, I think the country's gotten more conservative, and so it's harder. I don't think I could even go back right now. I probably couldn't get a visa. So, you know, depends on what you're up to. I mean, I have other friends who are Saudi who love living there, and I have people who, you know, grew up here and like living here. So the amazing thing I've discovered going around the world is that most people are enamored of where they started and grew up and think that's probably the most special place on the planet. And it seems that people can feel that way about all kinds of places on the planet. You know, if you grew up in Africa or in Asia or in Saudi or in the United States, whether it was in Virginia or Montana, people think, wow, well, where I started, that's really special.
Well, you're exactly right. You're exactly right. And I think that's good.
Yeah.
But what's really interesting in a town like Northfield, I can pull that shade down. We're going to take a break in a minute. In a town like Northfield, there are a lot of kids who want to get the hell out of this small town.
Yeah.
There's nothing to do.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about that 18 plus.
Yep, yep.
And then I've been here over 50 years.
Yeah.
Then you'll see them come back to raise their family.
Yeah.
Because it's such a nice town.
It's a great town. And I think it helps sometimes to go get some data on the alternatives and then be informed about that.
Well, you see that chain right there?
Yeah.
When you take your headset off, you can play. We have a newscast here, and you can adjust that for so it is in your eye. All right.
Perfect.
All right. This is the 195.1 FM and 1080 AM radio from Northfield, Minnesota.
Minnesota News Network, I'm Tasha Radel. A coalition of Twin Cities scientists this morning are calling on Governor Tim Walz to stop Line 3, the Enbridge pipeline that would transport crude oil from Canada through Minnesota for international export.
Earlier this month, Walz ordered the Commerce Department to review its court appeal to block the controversial $2.6 billion project. The appeal was started late last year under then-Governor Mark Dayton's administration. Supporters of the pipeline say it would have a great economic impact on the northern part of the state. The coalition says building Line 3 is, quote, climate denial, and that it will have disastrous implications for Minnesota's ecosystems, agriculture, and economy. Scott Peterson reporting.
Wabasso Public School in southwestern Minnesota is closed until Monday due to an outbreak of the flu. Superintendent Wade McKittrick posted a video on the school's Facebook page Wednesday night making the announcement. He said on Monday there were 53 students and 9 staff members sick with the flu. On Wednesday, the number of student cases rose to 74. That's about 20% of the student population. Flu activity is considered widespread across Minnesota. MnDOT is finishing a 5-year study and increasing speed limits from 55 to 60 miles an hour on over 3/4 of the 2-lane rural state highways in Minnesota. Engineering specialist Nathan Drews says setting more realistic speed limits, which more drivers obey, might actually reduce crashes, and data show it certainly will not increase crash numbers.
Ultimately, the goal is to have more drivers going the same speed or close to the same speed to reduce intervehicle conflicts.
Drew said studies show that drivers going under or over the speed limit get in the most crashes. And the Crow Wing County Sheriff's Office is investigating the death of a man found on the ice of Lake Mary in Emily. Foul play is not suspected. This is MNN.
I heard this through the grapevine.
Yes, you did. but who doesn't?
James Brown.
No. His first name is a name, that there's a company that makes windows.
Really? Marvin Gaye.
Yes.
That's who it is. Yep.
Marvin Gaye, I heard it through the grapevine, number two in all of 1968, the year my guest graduated from Saudi Arabia high school.
Beirut.
Beirut. Oh, Beirut.
Yeah. That's
were you around there?
That's where the boarding school was.
Oh.
Right. Yeah, the boarding. We lived in Saudi, but I was in a boarding school in Beirut.
Well, I didn't know that. Now, tell me about Beirut. Now, were you around when they...
Well, this was actually before all the Civil War, so it was a wonderful time.
Okay.
It was called the Paris of the Middle East at that time.
All right.
And it was fantastic. We used to ride the bus and taxis and go around the country and went camping. And
what did the women wear?
Beirut's pretty cosmopolitan.
Okay.
It was like Europe.
Where did you go camping?
In the mountains or, up in the hills or down by the shore, south places. Lebanon's a wonderful country. It's sort of like, people compare it to California, but it's not exactly like that. But it's, it's a coastal plain and then steep mountains and then a higher, drier valley, sort of like the Central Valley in California. And then if you go over the second range of mountains, you're into Syria, which is more desert.
Well, so I always
like the West Coast.
I always like to be able to connect to my guests, and we've been doing that.
Yeah.
But when you mentioned Lebanon, I dated a gal.
Ah, here we go.
Who was Lebanese.
Okay.
And I remember where her house is, and I'll never forget her father.
Did you go to Lebanon?
No.
Oh, you mean her house here?
Yeah. I'm just showing that I remember where
cool.
it is. And I remember the street, Sydney, okay? I didn't know how possessive Lebanese fathers are in regard to their daughters.
Yeah.
And you get her home a minute late.
And you're in trouble.
Yeah, and I walked through the door one time a little bit late, and he was there. And he was angry.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing I remember is the odor from the house.
Yeah.
Spicy.
Yeah.
So tell me about your experience with spices when you were over in Beirut.
The smells are incredible. There's a lot
good or bad?
Good. Yeah. Good. There's a lot of good street vendor food and bakeries, a lot of little small bakeries with their doors open. And, just walk by all of that, and you're just like, wow, I think I'm going to have some of that and some of that and some of that.
And did you?
I did. Oh, yeah.
Was it inexpensive?
Yeah, pretty inexpensive. And it's like street vendor food in other places. Usually it's good. Sometimes you wouldn't really want to eat a lot of it because, I'm not sure the health standards of what they sell on the street in this country or there are all the same. But it was really good food. And, great restaurants.
Did you develop the ability to eat hot, spicy?
That's one of the things I've never really gotten good at. My children make fun of me because what I call hot, they call mild.
I think we're going somewhere with that because same for me.
Yeah, so I'm not, whether it's Indian or Mexican or anything else, I'm just not big on hot food.
So when you were over there in high school, what about dating?
Oh, I was dating. Yeah, I had, took a different girl to the prom my junior year and my senior year. And, it was basically all Americans at this high school. So it was pretty much like a suburban high school, just transplanted in terms of the social interaction.
Now, when you went to the prom, did you wear a tuxedo?
Oh, yeah. And I had a tuxedo made for my senior prom.
Wow.
I still have it. It's white. It was a white tuxedo because the tailoring was pretty cheap there. So you could go get this guy to make you a tuxedo. I mean, I would never be able to fit into it today, but I still have it. Just I don't know why I still have it, but I do.
You remember the first name of the girl you took?
I do. I remember both of them. Yeah. My junior year, I took a girl named Kathy. And then senior year, I took a girl who was a Saudi girl. Actually, her name was Afaf.
Oh, Afaf?
Yeah.
Okay.
Afaf, yeah.
And was the father strict?
Well, he lived in Saudi, so she was or maybe they were in Beirut. I don't know where. But anyway, she was fine. We had a great time.
Okay.
And you'll like this thing. So the biggest thing at the school there about music and radio was there was no American radio except for the Voice of America. And so anybody who came to the States would tape hours of just U.S. radio playing all those songs that you've been playing. And then they would come back on reel-to-reel tape,
yep,
right?
Yep.
And this was the hottest commodity at the school. So if you had a new tape from the States, people would just sit and listen to it for hours. Like, oh, my gosh, listen to that.
Did they broadcast it over into the dorms and stuff? Or was
we
it...
did have a dorm radio station. I was talking to some friends at the Reed who were doing that, and they were telling me how the station got shut down because they didn't really have a license. So they just hooked up a transmitter. They were broadcasting it. I guess they got shut down. But, yeah, it was that, or we would have it at dances or events, or people would just play it in their rooms and, you know, play all this great music. Because, you know, you could get records, but they were hard to get.
Well, what would you say the advantages and disadvantages were being a boarder in a foreign school on an American campus or whatever it was?
Yeah, it's interesting because at Reunion we were talking, there's people who were boarders and then they're what we call day students who live with their families in town.
Yep.
And a lot of the parents were bankers or working for the Ford Foundation or the U.S. government or other corporations and things. So the boarders kind of bonded. I mean, you couldn't go out at night. You had to be in room. You had hours. You had to study. You know, so, you know, we were pretty diligent. We had from after dinner from like 7 to 10, you had to be in your room studying. And you could take a break at 8:30 for 10 minutes and go to the bathroom, and then you had to study. You know, and some day students had families that were like that, and some didn't, and some partied more than others. We didn't get to see as much of the city as people who lived there. So I know talking with them, they knew a lot more of the city than I did because I wasn't able to be as free with that. But it also meant you were more intensely involved in the school. So staying after school wasn't anything because I wasn't going anywhere. So I did stuff after school and before school. And, you know, you were there all the time. So it was a different life. I enjoyed it. And the irony is, I went from that environment we were talking about in Pennsylvania to this boarding department over one summer. And it was a pretty big transition. I couldn't have even found Saudi Arabia or Lebanon on a map before I went there. And it just felt good. The people were good, and I felt really embraced. And
Well, now, was Andy with you all that time?
Yeah, he and I went to school together. So he was when I was in 11th grade, he was in 9th grade.
And Andy, of course, is your brother, 2 years younger.
Yep. Yeah.
Is he the one with the middle name Roy? Or
no, that's Glenn.
Glenn, okay.
Yeah, so
Roy Rogers.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, so he graduated from there after I left. Yep. But, yep.
Was there a graduation ceremony?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at the American University campus. So I said this is like the dependent school for the American University, which is a big university. And so we went up to their chapel and they had a big commencement ceremony and graduation, and I have pictures of that. Yep.
No, was Glenn and Eddie there in?
You know, that's interesting. I was trying to remember. I looked in the pictures and I couldn't see them, but I don't remember whether they were there or not.
Okay.
Yeah. So Mom pictures then were all just film, right? So they weren't taking thousands of pictures because they were expensive.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. So Mom and Dad are there.
Yeah, they came to
and Andy's there, and you get your diploma.
Yeah,
and you're.
I've been admitted to Carleton.
Were you number one or two or three or four in your class?
I don't think I was one or two or three, but I was probably, you know, in the top 10 anyway.
Okay.
It was a very competitive class. I mean, people went to Stanford and all kinds of places out of that class.
And
pretty much everybody went to college.
And, of course, that brings us to the fact that you ended up at Carleton College.
Exactly.
Now, I had a guest on the other day, Chuck, I think you know Charlie Coogan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, we talked about how to get in there. He had a heritage, his great grandfather and grandfather, you know, it's a tradition type thing.
Right.
And I know after being in town here for 50 years that I used to say to a Carleton student I may have bumped into back in the early 70s at Marty's, which is used to be a... Were you around when...
Marty's, where was that? Is that in Dundas or here in town?
No, it's in the River Park Mall.
Oh, yeah.
It was on the north end, which became Mr. Movies.
I remember that.
Well, there was Carpenter's on the Mall, which the Oriental food. Ralph Carpenter from the Northfield News owned that. First, I think, was the old Piper Inn pizza place in there, and then Marty's. And he catered to Carleton and St. Olaf kids.
Yeah.
And with the Carleton kids, the joke was either you're really rich or really smart, or both.
Hopefully both. Yeah. I don't think they admit a lot of rich, not smart kids.
So now your father's in education, your mother's in education, you're from Pennsylvania. How did you end up with Carleton?
Well, that's an interesting question.
Take your time.
And it's a fun story, and it's maybe not exactly what you would think. So when I was 15, my parents decided we had to do the classic American, we're going to drive to California and back in a station wagon, right? So my mother's brother lived in Los Angeles.
Now, that's when you were 15?
We were still in Pennsylvania,
And Andy and Glenn were around?
We were all of us all went. Big station wagon.
What kind of station wagon?
My dad bought the first new car he ever bought. It was a Dodge wagon. I forget the name of it.
Caravan?
No, it wasn't a van. It was just a station wagon.
Okay.
Just a station wagon. It had a name I forget. And he was so proud. It was the first new car he had ever owned, his parents or himself. So
this was a 65, 66 model?
Yeah, I think he bought it in like 64.
Okay.
And in 65, we took this trip.
Okay.
Yeah.
And this is interesting.
Yeah, so we drove, you know, Route 66. We went, saw all the stuff. We saw, you know, the Mammoth Cave. We saw the Petrified Forest. We got in a sandstorm out in Arizona, and all the paint went off the front of the car. Remember, we had to get it repainted when we got to California.
Wow.
My uncle had a sailboat, and we went sailing out to Catalina and stayed overnight out there at Catalina and came back on his sailboat. So it was a great trip. And part of that trip coming back was we came back across the northern part. We went through the Badlands and came across Minnesota. And the boundary waters had just been set aside, I think, in 64. They were designated as a wilderness with Sigurd Olson and other people's work on that. And so my mother said, well, we should go see this. It's a brand new, cool park. So we went up to Ely, and they said, well, maybe we'll do a canoe trip. We had planned nothing. So we were just driving, imagine this, in this crowded station wagon. We'd been on the road for probably a month, right?
I can smell.
And yeah. And my mother says, well, we should do a canoe trip. And my dad and I were in, actually my brothers and I also, we were all in scouting, and we had done canoeing and stuff, and I'd gone canoeing in Pennsylvania. So they decided to do this sort of last minute canoe trip. We went to some outfitter, I don't remember which one, and we got stuff for two nights on the Kouishoui River. And I just remember it was sort of a boondoggle because, you know, stuff was falling out of the canoes. My brothers were young, but we did this two-night camping trip, and I was just in awe. I had never seen a place like the Boundary Waters. And so that made such an impression on me. When I was in high school later over there in that boarding school, all I could do was read about all the colleges in the country, right? And our whole family had always gone to Oberlin. So my parents went to Oberlin. My aunt and uncles went to Oberlin. My cousins went to Oberlin. It was like, you're next. You'll go to Oberlin.
Well, what's the reason of besides doing the heritage thing? What is Oberlin?
It's a liberal arts college.
Is it in Ohio?
It's in Ohio. So it's a college very much like Carleton.
Okay.
And it's in eastern Ohio. One of its claims to fame was it was probably the first integrated college in the North. Very long history of working with integration. They were a big stop on the Underground Railroad for people coming up, going on up through Detroit and into Canada. So it's got a great heritage and a history of itself. It's big in music and other programs, as well as the liberal arts and sciences. So it's a great school. And they had all gone there, and they're like, you should go to Oberlin. And I was like, well, I want to go canoeing. There's no canoeing in Ohio. I mean, there is, but it's not like the Boundary Waters. So I've set on this quest to find a school that was as good or better than Oberlin where I could go canoeing. And that became Carleton. So I looked at Carleton and McAllister, and for various reasons I got more focused on Carleton. And
did you go up and check out a McAllister?
I couldn't visit anything. I was in Beirut. So I didn't visit any schools. Okay. This was all by reading about it in a book. And
this is before everything we had.
There was no internet. Yeah, yeah, there was nothing. You could read about it in a book, or you could write a letter and wait a month.
Yeah, okay.
So anyway, I applied to Carleton because I wanted to go canoeing. And it was as good or better than Oberlin. And it is better than Oberlin, I think. Now, as a Carl, I'm biased. But anyway, it's certainly of the same caliber. And Carleton accepted me. So then I'm like, Oberlin also accepted me. And so then I had to tell my parents, well, I did get accepted, but I'm going to Carleton, not Oberlin. So here I am.
And you had never been in Northfield?
Nope.
The closest you've been to Northfield was up by Ely.
Yeah,
and then,
right. Okay. Exactly. Never been here.
Okay. One of the things I love to do is ask people who come to Northfield for their very first time.
Yeah.
First, what were your expectations? And second, what... how did you come into town? Off of 35, or did you come in on 19, or did you come in on 246, or did you take the airplane and come down Cedar Avenue? Tell me about your first encounter with the city of Northfield.
You'll remember this. There wasn't no 35. So there wasn't coming down 35 in 1968. So I came to town. I flew into town. And I came down on a bus. I think we at that time the standard route was to come down 3. So you would come down 3 Roberts Trail from the airport.
Yep.
And you take 149 and then come down 3. And so I'm pretty sure that's how I came into town on a bus. And I got off up there by Willis. And it was like, huh, this is what we're in.
Now, what kind of a bus was this?
I think the Jefferson Lines ran buses for students because that... When everybody's coming back to school,
yeah,
the college would organize a bus.
Okay.
For you could sort of schedule it.
That's why they went on campus, because normally parked in front of the hotel.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. The Stewart was here
at
the time, and that used to be the bus station, as you said.
Yep.
Exactly. I've taken that bus, too. I used to wait down here to take a bus to go to the airport. But, yeah. So that was it. So I came into town on the bus and got over. We had come by the summer. That summer, after I was admitted, after I graduated, we had been in the States, and we had come by and dropped off my trunk. So it was here somehow, and I had seen the college briefly, you know, over the summer, but didn't stay here. And then I came back, and that was got my trunk, and went over to Goodhue and moved in.
Charlie Cogan. Was that good to you?
Oh, was he really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So your first impression, you know, I would be a townie, you would be a gownie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So your first impression of Northfield is the Carleton College campus.
Yep.
Not the downtown area or anything like that when you first came.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of, I'm going to Carleton and, there's buildings over there.
Yeah. Yeah, probably.
So you settled in as a freshman.
Yep.
Okay. Tell me, when's the first time you got to go canoeing?
Well, I went on a canoe trip the following summer. In fact, every summer after college, I went on a canoe trip in the Boundary Waters. So I made that a thing I just did. And so, I took advantage of being here to do that. We had a group that would go on trips up there. And I don't remember canoeing much. I don't think I like went canoeing on Lyman Lakes or thing. Might have gone canoeing on the Cannon.
Yep.
I think we did some of that.
Oh, a lot of us have done that.
Yeah.
Sometimes you walk it.
Yeah, exactly. It's a little slow.
Yeah. But I've heard of people that fished at Lyman and literally caught fish.
Oh, there's fish in there. I'm not sure I'd eat them, but there's fish in there.
And, of course, you had the ARB. This is 1968.
Oh, yeah.
And believe it or not, I rode my motorcycle through the ARB.
Really?
Frequently.
I'm not sure that was permitted.
Well, it was. If you can get around the rock, it was okay.
It was. Yeah, you could do it. I'm not saying that.
Yeah. And I wasn't the only one, but it was beautiful back there with the dirt bike.
It's gorgeous.
Then the KYMN radio station, originally the studios were under the tower, which is just northeast here, 3.5 miles out in Waterford Township.
Okay.
And so every day, literally every day, 2-3 times a day, I would be going by the
campus.
The campus or the ARB.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, occasionally I had a motorcycle. I'd go through there, and then they put up the gates and the boulders and asked us in a very nice way, you know, we're trying to preserve this area. And, okay, there used to be a house in the ARB when you were here.
Oh, there were several houses. Right.
Did you ever use one of those?
I didn't stay in those. But when I was a freshman, the dorms were separated, men and women.
Yeah.
And so Goody was all men. And a lot of people slept out in the ARB, let's just say.
Okay. It's notorious, put it like that.
Yeah.
Now, when I came to town, the campus on the end of 2nd Street, I think it is, was a woman's dorm. And then
Watson Hall was a women's dorm. Right?
Okay, and it's on the...
Yeah, it's down there. Watson, Norris, and Evans were all women. Yeah.
Okay, then they changed it to men on one floor and women on another floor. And then they changed it to men and women on any floor.
Yep.
Use the same bathroom, same showers.
Yeah,
well, the shower stalls were different, but...
It's a long, long way from where we started.
Yeah, you know, it really is, and I suppose that's all good.
It's good, I think. I think students now actually want a little more privacy, and so one of our issues is trying to, some of those old buildings that weren't built to be, you know, men and women together really need different facilities, and so we've been working on some of that.
Well, I got to ask you, otherwise I'll pass it up. As a common, ordinary, everyday guy, average income, blah, 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 I looked at these houses that you built along 19.
Division there, yep.
Yeah, or division, but past 2nd Street, right on the corner.
Yeah.
And I'm going, wow, those are really, really nice.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, boy, a guy that goes to college and gets to have that type of housing. They must be standing in line to get that.
They're, I think, the most popular housing. So our housing is assigned by a lottery. So we assign freshmen, and then all the rest of the students go through a lottery process by class. So the seniors get numbers, and they all choose first. So whoever is the senior with the lowest number, they get their pick of the whole campus. And it goes like that. And then so the sophomores go last, and so... people who are about to be sophomores, right? And then, so the last number in the sophomore class, he gets the one no one else wanted.
Yeah. Well, what about freshmen?
Freshmen are assigned by the college.
Okay.
Because they get assigned so that they're not all in one place.
Okay.
So they get put around. So they go in first, and they don't put freshmen in the townhouses. So they wouldn't put freshmen in there.
Okay. They are beautiful.
They're very nice.
And what about how many... residents are there in those?
I think there's 110. I think there's 110, and they're typically in a unit that has 5 people in it.
Okay.
So there'd be 5 people with 2 or 3 bedrooms, probably 3 bedrooms, maybe 4, and a kitchen and probably 2 bathrooms and a little living room.
2 bathrooms.
Probably for
people. No, did they have both men and women living in those quarters?
No, I think it's just to allow everybody to get a shower and get out of there in the morning. But there might only be one. I'm not sure. I haven't been through.
Okay. Well, anyhow, they're very nice.
They are nice.
And then, by the way, folks, if you just tuned in, my guest this morning is Fred Rogers, rising from the dead. he is the CFO of Carleton College. It is 10:26. I got a lot of more. I'm really enjoying our conversation. Just right there, you know, I love stories, and you got a lot of them. We'll be right back, but first...
Don't let a dead battery leave you stranded this winter. When a warning light comes on, it may already be too late. Visit Witt Brothers Service, your Napa Auto Care Center, for a free battery check, and make sure your battery is up to the challenge of a Minnesota winter. Need a replacement? Witt Brothers can make it easier on your wallet with a $25 Visa gift card by mail with the purchase of a Napa Legend or Napa Premium battery. Visit Witt Brothers Service at 701 Division Street in downtown Northfield for full details.
Familiar. Trying to get a word to come in my head.
There's no, it's It's an instrumental.
Oh, yeah.
It's called Love Is Blue.
Oh, I don't remember that as much. I've heard it, but...
Yeah, well, I'm sure teenagers didn't know it. Yeah.
Who was it?
Paul Muriat.
Oh, yeah.
Love Is Blue.
Yeah.
It's the number three song of all of 1968.
Really? Number three song?
Yeah.
Wow. I've heard it.
Well, first time I heard it, the morning disc jockey played that, and I was getting in bed. I had a 9 o'clock show. And I went, wow, that is really a beautiful song. Yeah. And it is, and I enjoy it.
It's nice.
At 28 minutes after 10 o'clock, yeah, already. Mm-hmm. Fred Rogers, my guest, CFO at Carleton College. I got to ask you an interesting question to me. What about Highway 19 from 2nd Street going east on the... Going east, but on the west side.
Going
how can
north,
I say that?
On the west side.
Yeah. The houses that are down there towards and down to the stadium.
Yep.
Now, those in the last 50 years that I've been here, mm-hmm. They have been bought up by Carleton College that I'm aware of, but there are also some that have not been sold, and I don't know if one arrangement.
I think there's one that the college doesn't own, but I think there's only one that was bought there. I'm not sure. Most of those have been owned by the college a very long time.
Yeah.
So, like Allen House was once the Northfield Hospital, and nurses' facility next door there, and those were the Carleton Infirmary when I was a student. So they've been owned by the college for a really long time.
Northfield Hospital?
I think that's the story. Now, I asked Steve Underall that question. He said he doesn't see that over there, and I'm like, well, I don't know how that is then, because... There's two houses there that have a tunnel underground that connects them. And my understanding was one was a nurse's residence and one was the hospital. Maybe it was just the college infirmary, but I thought it was very early hospital before they built the hospital.
Well, the first hospital that I'm aware of in Northfield is on Water Street, and it's still there. It's a goldish yellow in color.
Oh, really?
And it's a huge house, and it's on like 8th Street and Water.
Huh.
And it stands out. It's a big house on a corner lot. Then they built the one over on 2nd Street.
Yeah, by Wade Park over there. Right.
And then they, of course, built the one out there.
Yeah, and the one at Wade Park is the one I remember when I was a student.
Yeah.
I spent time in that emergency room as a student.
What happened?
Well, just normal stuff, you know, cuts and...
Pumping your tongue? your stomach?
No, I think it was a sledding accident, actually.
Okay. Sledding?
Yeah.
Where'd you go sledding?
We would sled down the Evans Hill and down the other hills over there on that side of the bluff towards Goodhue. Yeah.
Now, the campus has changed dramatically since you've been there, particularly in the sporting area with new fields and this and that.
Yeah,
I have to share a story with you that I have told many times on the radio. When if you graduated in 68 from high school, that would make you 72, right?
No. But I'm not going to say, but we're close. Oh. I'm not 72 yet, but...
No, not your age.
Oh, 72 class? Yes.
Okay, no, not your age. You would be the class of 72.
Yeah, I was the class of 72, okay. Absolutely. I was.
You remember that Carleton was in the Midwest to play football, basketball, and all of that. And so was St. Olaf.
Yep.
But then St. Olaf joined the MIAC.
Yeah.
When St. Olaf came to Carleton Stadium for their football game, as you remember, Carleton didn't have a pep band. They had just people that were peppy, and they would go out and in their...
The boys' band.
Yeah, and it was just guys that enjoyed the rhythm and the horns. And they went out on the field, and the announcer said, "Ladies and gentlemen... This song is going to be dedicated to the St. Olaf Olies. They'll be joining the MIAC next season." And then this ragtag band plays Fool on the Hill. I love that story.
Yeah, there's always been a certain competitive issue between Carleton and St. Olaf.
Oh, boy, 1031. Fred Rogers is my guest here on KYMN Radio. Let me ask you a question I've always wanted to ask,
okay.
and thank you for your honesty. Do the homes at Carlton and St. Olaf own, are they taxed at all?
It depends on two things. The ones that faculty live in are taxable, and they stay on the taxes. The ones that students live in are not, but the history of people having changed uses means that they're not all consistent. So are there some that are today students in that are still being paid taxes on them?
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty obvious that the housing is growing on St. Olaf because they're buying up the homes on St. Olaf Avenue.
Yeah, coming down St. Olaf Avenue.
And they're probably a block down from the campus now. And then I know that on the east side of Northfield that there are a lot of people that have, I think, and you tell me, let's say I owned the house.
Yeah.
I could go to you and say, you know what, this house is worth $150,000. Tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to let Carleton College buy this when I'm done living there. Mm-hmm. Let's set up the deal.
Yeah.
Does that happen?
Very rarely. That's happened with, in my lifetime, I can remember one that I've been here that that's happened on. We have a number of people that approach the college thinking we'll buy their house, and mostly I say no. So there's an area right next to the campus, sort of between the White Center and the college, where you know we would like to own the rest of those properties.
Sure.
And we've let that be known for a decade or longer, published a map actually about it. But the notion that college buys every house that people offer us is just not correct.
And not true.
There are
okay.
some very disappointed homeowners who've offered me their houses 2 and 3 times. I still say no.
Okay. Now, one of the more interesting thing that happened in the last 10 years is the White Center.
Yeah, the White Center.
And, boy, that, to me, was really confusing on what you should do. Number one, the building had to be raised by some people's opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Others said raise it and build affordable housing.
Yep.
Some suggested that they do go high and rent apartments.
Yep.
And if I remember correctly, that I was chairman of the park board at one time.
Oh, okay.
So that Central Park
right.
was very part
right.
of our discussion.
Exactly.
So I'm thinking that they're buying a building for, if I recall, $450,000.
It's on that order, something like that.
Yeah. And I'm thinking that's pretty cheap for the land and the building, but the building really needs a lot of money to make it into anything.
Mm-hmm.
So the end result was, in my opinion, as a townie, Carlton got a really good deal, and so did the community.
Mm-hmm.
What's your thoughts on how'd that go down?
Well, one of the things I don't think people really understood, the appraisal was about $2.5 million when we bought that, because the whole block. And the reason we got it for $450,000 was there was over $2 million of asbestos abatement that the school district didn't want to do. And so before you could do anything, somebody had to drop $2 million there just to get the asbestos out of the building. And so that was the biggest issue in the negotiation. It says, you know, sort of like if you buy a house and you say, well, the roof needs to be repaired, you know, the seller has to put in something for that. So in this case, it was just a really big issue. And the board didn't want to buy it either. Our board of trustees, if it was going to be a, you know, full price and a $2 million liability, that was pretty much. So that was the biggest piece of the price negotiation. And so then, yeah, eventually the school district board had a vote and they said, you know, it's costing us money to hold it every month. We have this huge liability, which we don't really want to fund. They didn't want to tax everybody in Northfield to take all the asbestos out of the building. And so we struck a deal over that, and then we had to do that. So we did do that.
And you did a beautiful job.
Yeah, and eventually it took us a long time, as you know. It took us 5 years to get the building planned and fundraised for it and developed and eventually get it built. But, yeah, it's come out well.
Well, what all is in there? I've been in there for a soiree, if you will.
Nice.
And but I haven't. I don't know if I've ever been upstairs. I don't know if I've ever been where the old basketball court was.
Which one?
The one in the basement that you had to step up to.
Oh, yeah.
The one on the, it'd be on the north east side. In the basement.
That the one in the basement's on the south side, in the, okay, in the original building. Yeah.
Okay, you know what I mean.
Yeah, the fascinating history to me of that site is really the foresight of the Northfield residents. I mean, the 1910 building there, as you know, was the second school built on that site, because there was a building built in 18... Hayes will get this right. I'm not sure I remember exactly. But in the 1880s or early 90s, I think. Great big school building. There's pictures of it. I think there's a picture in one of the pictures you have out here. You can see it in the background. And that building burned down in the early 1900s. And then, because a lot of those buildings at the time were wood frame buildings, and they were heated with coal-fired boilers and fireplaces. And so a lot of buildings burned down. Willis Hall burned down in the same time frame. And so after it burned down, the town came around and they built this building that in any way is even more elaborate. I mean, the brickwork and the structure of that building is just phenomenal. So it was a great testament to the town's belief in education. And the building was originally K through 12, right? It was the town school. And then over the years, the 1930s addition built on the back, on the north side there, and then the 1950s addition. And each one of those three pieces had a gymnasium. So there was a gym in the first building, yeah. There was a bigger gym in the second building, and then there was the biggest gym in the third building. And when we took the building and said, how are we going to renovate this and what are we going to do with it? And we spent a fair amount of money, had to get new roof, new heating, all the asbestos taken out, you know, all new wiring, never been air conditioned. So it had to get air. So there was a huge amount of that. But then there were these three gyms. And what would you do with a building that had three old gymnasiums? So the original 1910 one that's way down in the basement is now video production studios. So there's two video studios in there that are full scale. You could make a TV show or a movie in there. They don't have a lot of set, so they have screens and things. But all the equipment, sound, they're completely soundproofed.
Who's running that department?
So that's run through our program called Cinema and Media Studies. So they teach filmmaking.
Okay.
So students can actually make films in there. We have a mixing and editing room. We have a sound booth where you can go and record sound and sing or play an instrument, and it's fully waffle cone protected and stuff. So they have quite a setup for, yeah, Cinema and Media Studies teaching film and production. And that's an amazing facility. And then the second gymnasium, which was that odd connection, remember, between the gym and then the performance hall.
Yeah.
So it had those seats that you could watch a play or you could watch a basketball game. It's a very odd construction. And the curtain came down to kind of separate the rest of the gym from the stage. So that area got divided, and the seating area became the cinema. So where you go to the movies at Carleton now, that's in the old auditorium there.
Okay.
And then the gym was divided into two dance studios. So there's two dance studios, and the dance department is in there. And they teach dance, modern, mm-hmm, dance, classical dance, all of that.
Does Mary Easter still?
Mary's retired.
Retired, okay.
But you're right. She was the person who formed the dance program, really, at Carleton.
Right.
And these studios are way better than the one little studio they had in Cowling when Mary was teaching. So that's the second gym. And then the third gym became the theater. So it's a dramatic theater with a big stage and seating and lights. And, you know, it's got a shop theater. So it's got a practice and setup theater. And it's got the full theater. It's got a theater shop to make all the sets and stuff. And so that whole gym space became that.
Was that for the thespians?
Yeah, so the drama department's in the building. So, too, I'm answering in a long way around your question of who's in the building. So the Cinema and Media Studies department's in the building, and they have great facilities. The drama and theater program is in the building, and dance. And then this last time, we added that addition on the east side, and the music department's there.
Oh.
And so the music department's there, and they have a whole set of practice rooms and rehearsal spaces, and then the glorious Crakeham Performance Hall, where you can do performances now with 400 seats, and probably, I'm going to brag, I would say the most acoustically tuned room in Northfield. It's just amazing space.
Now, the western entrance with the stairway,
mm-hmm, yep,
was that kept for the purpose of that was then and this is now?
Yeah,
you reserved that because there's many people that, right, went through those, up those steps into the school.
Right. And if you go up those steps now, it's not usually an open door. You can come out there, but you don't go in. But in there, the marble ticket booth is still there. and the doors that went into the auditorium are still there, except you can't go into the auditorium that way. You have to go the other way. So we kept the lobby to look like it looked. Yeah.
Which, of course, is great for kids that graduated from there. My wife is in charge of the Northfield Ambassadors with the defeated Jesse James Day celebration.
Right.
And we used White Center, I think a couple of years ago, for the little kids.
Yeah.
And they could perform, and the seating was at an elevation that nobody's going to get in your way when you watch the play.
Yeah.
And the acoustics were excellent.
Yeah.
And, of course, they had trouble with the equipment.
Oh, did they? Oh.
Well, this was the use of your facilities with no good communication with the student that was supposed to help and blah, 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 blah.
That happens sometimes.
And so what are we going to do with these 18 kids, 6 and 5 years old?
Hmm.
So I thought, well, I'll help. And so the acoustics were fantastic. I could talk to the last person up there by the booth, like I'm talking to you right now, and they could hear it. So
yeah, no, it's good.
Good job on that.
Good, yeah. Have you been to a performance in the new Crakeham Performance Hall?
You know, I have not.
Oh, you should. I tell everybody. The schedule is public. It's on the website, and you can find their student recitals. There's concerts and other things in there. It's just amazing. It's really cool. So you should pick a program you'd be interested in and go.
You know, one of the things that I have not taken advantage of so much is all of the opportunities that are presented by the colleges, both St. Olaf and Carleton.
Right, there are a lot.
You know, you get perturbed when everybody says St. Olaf and Carleton. Do you want it to be Carleton and St. Olaf?
No, I'm okay with that. Okay. The highway sign on 35 says Carleton and St. Olaf.
Okay, well, there you go, alphabetically. We will be right back with our guest, Fred Rogers, CFO for Carleton College. And we will be back after these important timeouts.
2,000 fence posts, 900 acres, 48 bales, one trophy, all before lunch, which we caught last Saturday. There aren't enough hours in the day, so we work in the dark. The 9 to 5 here is 5 to 9. We earn our scars. We wear our work ethic. We work until the work's done. And when it is, a few hours of shut-eye to rest up for tomorrow, the day we'll finally get something done. The Can-Am Defender family of side-by-sides. We're built for this. Find the perfect Defender for your hard day's work at Leo South in Lakeville today.
The affordable one, the one you want at Leo South.
All the world over so easy to see. People everywhere just want to be free. Listen, please, listen, that's the way it should be.
The Rascals.
The Rascals.
And People Got to Be Free.
That's actually the name of the song.
Seems to me.
I've heard it, but I don't know.
A lot of protest songs back then.
There were a lot of protest songs.
Which, let me jump on subjects here. I got a lot more to talk about. But when you graduated from high school in 1968, Vietnam was a really a hot spot, if not the hottest year.
Oh, yeah.
And you're over in Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
Are you paying attention to the fact that you could be drafted?
Oh, I was quite anxious to go to college. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's one of the reasons I think everybody in my high school class, especially all the men who could, went to college.
Were you aware of it over there in Saudi Arabia?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was in the news. Yeah, yeah.
But not as much as it would have been here.
It wasn't the same as being on the campus with the protests that went on here on campus and up in the cities. And, you know, I was in one march that went from, I think, from the federal building in Minneapolis over to the state capitol. And so, yeah, there was a lot of that going on.
Okay, so you're aware of the war as a kid in high school, and you picked your college because you've been through Minnesota and you like the boundary waters.
Yep.
And so you chose Carleton because it has a wonderful reputation.
Yep.
And you did it in a book, not online, because there's no such thing then.
Yeah.
So you come here and you are now a freshman. Was there any harassment in those days, 1968, for a freshman?
Well, there was, you know, you had to do this thing called the beanie toss. So alumni will remember this, but they had these little silly green beanies, and you were supposed to, you put it into a pile. I forget how you identified it. And what the thing was, you had to get another, a girl in the class, another freshman, and she was supposed to sew your name on the beanie. It was really a sexist thing. It's terrible.
Yeah.
But that was what happened. And so there were, you took off, I forget what it was, but maybe it was you put shoes in the center, and then whoever's shoe you got, so there was like the girl's shoes and the guy's shoes, and then, you know, whoever's shoe you got, they had to sew your name on this beanie. And, yeah, it was terrible.
Did you have to wear the beanie?
Well, then, yeah, then you're supposed to wear it, and the sophomores would harass you about it. You know, you freshmen wearing your beanie. I think most people threw it away, and I think a lot of the women refused to do it, and good for them.
Well, I remember the beanies being worn up on the St. Olaf campus.
They did something like that?
Yeah, they had to wear beanies to do, because they were freshmen,
right,
and they were harassed.
Right.
And I went through that in when I was at a boarding school for high school. It was a military school.
Oh, yeah.
And you knew you were a freshman.
Yeah.
But you couldn't wait to be a sophomore.
Yeah, yeah.
So so you then enrolled in Carleton College. Therefore, you were 4F, not 4F, whatever.
Yeah, it wasn't 4F. It was just a student deferral.
Yeah. And then they got into the numbers game after that, right?
They did.
And now they're going to draw numbers.
Yep.
And
So my draft board was here in Northfield, right?
Okay.
Because that was my local draft board.
Okay.
And so then they had this lottery. You're right. And the rule was, you had to stand for the lottery once. So 1 year, you had to be eligible for the lottery, and if you were drafted, you were gone, and if you weren't drafted, then you were out.
And you wanted a high number.
So, right.
You remember your number?
I think my number was around, I think it was around 230.
Oh, so you were pretty,
so I was pretty
comfortable
sure
with that.
And my senior year, I allowed myself to go to be exposed to the draft, and they never got, you know, over like 180, I think, that year. And so I lucked out, basically.
Yeah.
I got a high number.
Did you have any buddies that got low numbers that had to go and serve?
I think there were. I don't remember knowing people very well who did that, because most people were either going to go to graduate school, or you could get a graduate student deferral as well. My theory was, I had a number I thought was going to get me out, and so better to take it and get out than to keep waiting. And you go to graduate school, you don't know what number you'll get another year.
Fred Rogers is my guest. He's the CFO for Carleton College, and really having a good time talking with you. We might have to invite you back. We still have you in college.
This is fun.
Yeah, and one of the things I asked you is when you came to, if you just tuned in, folks, Mr. Rogers told about getting to Northfield by way of a bus, and the bus went right to the campus, so he didn't get exposed to downtown Northfield, because last time he had been on campus was in your folks' vehicle.
Just to drop off my trunk, yeah.
Yeah. So when did you discover that there was a community here, that some people didn't work at Carleton didn't work at St. Olaf?
Well, I started walking downtown to do things. You know, there were no bars in town, and so you would come down to see things. But I couldn't afford to eat downtown, so I had a meal plan on campus, so I pretty much ate my meals there. So there weren't a lot of reasons, honestly, to come down. One of the first organizations that I got involved with, I remember, was actually the library.
Okay.
So I would come to the library, and I had my mother had been an elementary school teacher. One of the things I liked to do was read. So I remember coming to the library, and they had a program, I think it was Saturday mornings, you could come and read in the children's department. And so college students would come and read to kids. And I remember doing that and finding that to be a lot of fun. And
well, you know, I mentioned a couple of times about a connection.
Yeah.
And your mother was a librarian.
Early, and then she was a teacher, yeah.
And my uncle, Uncle Clyde, most people called him Father Eddie, had a doctorate degree in library science and ran the library up at St. Thomas, the Shaughnessy Library.
Yeah. Wow.
And I helped him put the book, sir, from the old library to the new one.
Yeah.
It's a long time ago.
That's a big library.
But it's, to me, it's still a new library. Boy, that new library looks great. 9 minutes before 11 o'clock on KYMN Radio, a friend you can count on. What about your hair in 1968? You mentioned that you didn't come downtown, but we used to have 4 barbershops in town at that time.
Judging from the pictures, I wasn't cutting it a lot.
Yeah, that's...
So I don't remember where I got a cut, but I don't think I was cut a lot. It never got to my shoulders, but I had longer hair, yeah.
Did you ever get involved in any music, instruments, bands?
I did. I actually tried to play the clarinet. So I started in... I think in fourth grade, I was assigned, as I say, to the clarinet because they said, you know, you're going to be in the band, and we already have people playing the flute, and we have people playing this and this, so we don't have a clarinetist. So you be a clarinetist.
Yep.
So that was how I picked the clarinet. And they gave me one, you know, and they said, okay, here, learn this. So I never got to be anything super bad. I played all the way through high school. And so I played some in the Carlton band, but I didn't practice. I didn't have a discipline about practicing it. And so
you still pull it out every once in a while?
No, I don't. I later in life took up the recorder and played some of that for a while, but I haven't done that recently.
The recorder?
Do you know a recorder? It's a wood instrument that it's similar to a clarinet. It doesn't have a reed. So it's just, it just plays sort of, it's not really like a flute either. It's a wood instrument that you play kind of like a clarinet.
And it's just for your own pleasure.
Yeah, people
they
do
don't
record.
Have them in bands, do they?
They don't do bands. It's a softer tone, so it's more, there'll be like quartets, and there's a bass and a soprano recorder, and you can play different.
Yeah, there are holes on top where you
finger
it?
Yeah, you finger it like that.
And no reed?
No reed.
Okay. And you got pretty good at that?
I got okay. My wife and I actually have 2 recorders, and we used to play things together, but...
Well, tell me about the cave.
The cave, yes.
Yeah, tell me what it was like back in your years, and that was 68 to 72.
Yeah.
And, of course, a bar came to town before you graduated.
Yeah.
So the cave had served beer.
I think it was 3-2 beer.
I was going to say, back then it was 3-2.
It was 3-2, yeah, which wasn't really worth drinking, most students thought, I think. Yeah. But, the cave was fun. We'd go over there and have concerts and events, and, you know, it was an active spot. There were not a lot of places like that in Northfield at the time.
Yeah.
And so it was quite popular. And one of the fun things we did when, you know, more recently, when I was involved with the project to renovate Evans in 2013.
Help me. Where's Evans?
Evans Hall it's back by the hill there at the east side of campus. So it's the easternmost building of the old red brick dark building.
Okay, and then further east are the new ones?
Then the Goodhue's across the lake from that.
Okay.
And then the new ones are a little bit west of that, actually.
And those were made and built to acclimate with what already has been on the campus.
The new ones, yeah. I think they were supposed to look a little bit like Norris.
Well, when they were done, they didn't look new.
No.
Except for the windows.
Yeah. Well, the windows are new. Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that was good.
That was you go, holy cow, have they been there? If you haven't been by it for a while?
Yeah.
And when I give tours.
Yeah, nice.
And I do it personally now in my convertible.
Mm-hmm.
But I did do it for buses for the Chamber of Commerce.
Nice.
And go up on the campuses and all that.
Yeah.
So I like to show them that particular area.
Yeah.
Was Casey Jarko?
Casey Jarko was there. I don't remember what his role was.
He was a dean of students.
Yeah, I think Bardwell Smith was, what was he? Was he dean of the college, maybe? And Casey was dean of students. That probably is right.
Yeah. Did you ever?
I tried to not have a lot of interactions because usually if you were interacting with the dean, it wasn't good.
Okay. Did you didn't get to know him then?
I don't think I knew him very well, no.
What a guy. What a guy.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of stories.
And a heck of a good cribbage player.
Uh-huh.
And when he passed away, I had a note that he owed me $2.36 or something from a cribbage game that we had played.
Yeah.
And so I gave it to Doris, and I says, well, put it in the coffin, and, you know, the IOU can go with him.
Yeah.
I don't know if she
Someday you'll meet him later and he can pay you.
Speedball, meet him later. I got to meet the responsibility of a final word here on the Wayne Eddy Affair this morning.
We ran out of time.
On KYMN, we take this brief break, and then we'll be back with the number one song in all of 1968. And the minute I play it, it's going to be given away.
All right.
All right.
Residential or commercial, Cannon Valley Water in Dundas is the place to call for water. Whether it's a complete water conditioning system or just salt delivery and filters, Cannon Valley Water can take care of it. And Cannon Valley Water can also deliver Candy Yohai premium water right to your house or business at great rates, too. Chippewa Springs is as pure today as it was when we first tested it over a century ago, and is proudly distributed by Cannon Valley Water. Pickups are now located at 609 Stafford Lane in Dundas, just behind Aldi. Call Cannon Valley for your water today.
For your next haircut, here's a thought. Try Family Hair of Northfield. They're locally owned and operated. Family Hair offers friendly service at a great price. Located just across the parking lot from Just Food, Family Hair does cuts, perms, coloring, everything hair. No appointment is needed. Just walk right in. Christy, Megan, and their staff are great at what they do at prices you can't beat. If you have younger kids, they'll love the special kids seat with their choice of movies to watch while they get their hair cut. Visit Family Hair of Northfield.
Okay, are you ready?
Here we go.
The number one song in all of 1968. At that time, I was a disc jockey at KAUS in Austin, Minnesota, and the Hippy Dippy Weatherman on their TV part of it. So I got to play rock and roll music standing up, and then I got to stand up and do the weather live and in color. So I'll do it like kind of like I would have done.
Yeah, give me the DJ intro.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, here we go with the number one song. We're talking number one in all of 1968. Are you ready to rock and roll on the Wayne Eddy Affair?
Hey Jude.
Hey Jude, yeah, there we go. The
don't
Beatles.
Make it by.
That's a great song. Who doesn't know that song?
I did a lousy job of being a disc jockey.
You got to get a song that doesn't start with its title.
Yeah. Well, what's nice about this record, back in the old days, you could play that and run to the bathroom.
Yeah, it's long because the end just goes on and on.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's five and a half minutes long.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we're going to hang it up here. 1.5 minutes before 11 o'clock is the correct time on the Wayne Eddy Affair. My guest this morning is Fred Rogers, and he is CFO for Carleton. Do you have a doctorate degree?
I do not. I have a master's degree from Carnegie Mellon.
Okay.
We talked a little bit about it. We didn't get all there, but we mentioned it.
No. What we got is you in college.
Yeah.
So I'm going to invite you, please, to come back and find out how you ended up back working for your alma mater.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure you didn't graduate from Carleton and walk into the office and go to work.
Nope.
You had to be out there looking for a job in 1972, the height of the Vietnam War. You didn't you had a high number, offered yourself up. They made a drawing. You were a high number, so
yeah.
Do you have any buddies that shared their experience that had to go in?
I don't. Happily for most of my friends, they didn't have to go.
All right. What side of town do you live on here in Northfield?
I live on the east side of town. I live out, actually, a little bit out of town on 8 acres out there.
Out Woodley?
Yep, out Woodley, out that way. Yep.
Well, I go out there all the time.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's a back way to Denison.
Yep.
And, okay, you know, one of the things that pleases me is a person like yourself that is employed by a college in town and lives